So it's interesting the background that Alonzo gave, because some of my slides, we must have been sleeping and dreaming about the same types of things we needed to talk about, because we have many of the same challenges and background, but it certainly is approaching it from a different way. So I really wanted to talk about the accreditation journey from a very small and rural county perspective. And we knew that in a small county, there's no way that we could address accreditation and what we needed to do on our own. And actually, the same is true in a county like LA. This is a picture of our main street. In Plumas County, we have a main street communities. We have four major ones. This is our largest community of 2,000 people where I live. We have one stoplight. And just to give you a background of what Plumas County is like, our land mass is a little over 2,500 square miles, and to put that into perspective, it's about the size of Delaware. You see that little red spot in the northeast corner of California? That's where we are. We border Nevada, and we have over 1 million acres of national forest, over 100 lakes. It's funny, one of my colleagues just at our annual Health Directors Association earlier this month meeting had said, I'd like to come up to Plumas sometime. Do you guys have a lake? I said, we have over 100 lakes. We have over 1,000 miles of rivers and streams. There's a lot to do in terms of the outdoors, and 70% of the land is federally owned. We have Northern Mountain Maindu are Native Americans that are indigenous to the area, and there's a strong culture and tradition of Maindu there. And we also have a rich history of mining, logging, and ranching, which also parallels with some the mindset of rugged independence. The government isn't going to tell us what to do and what not to do. So in terms of demographics, we've been hovering around 20,000 people for many years, but our population estimate has dropped the last few years. We have just under 20,000 people. The population density, that's less than 8 people per square mile. It's a little over 7.5. And to compare ourselves with the rest of California, almost 85% of our population is white non-Hispanic, compared with California, 39.7%. So a little bit less diverse than the rest of our state. And I always joke, so 2.5% of our population is foreign-born, and I'm one of them, and my assistant director is another. So we always joke that we make up that 2.5% in comparison to California's almost 12%. What's interesting is we have a large aging population. You know, almost 22% of our population is over 65, twice that of California. But when you look at the children, we have less children in proportion to California as well. We have more children living in poverty. So it's no surprise we also have more single-parent households. Our unemployment, our annual unemployment, is always more than California, but one thing that number doesn't show you is that we have a lot of seasonal unemployment, because the backbone of our economy is logging and mills and seasonal work. So in the wintertime, we have an unemployment rate upwards of 26-27%, and that's huge, which kind of relates to our vacant housing units, 43% compared with California's 8%. So when I try to tell people where is it that we live, I say, well, in other words, we don't have a mall, we don't have any fast food, there is no McDonald's. The closest McDonald's is 84 miles away. There's no Walmart. Yes! And there's no Costco. So my children don't know what a mall is, and I kind of like that. It's really nice. But they do know what Amazon.com is, so, you know. So what are our rural challenges? We have challenges of geography. Even though you look at our landmass and how many people there are, we are spread out in four very separate communities that are all separated by mountain passes. We get snowed out or washed out or rained out, and there actually was a time before I moved there in 94, where we had some floods. We were completely cut off on both ends of the county, so there was no food, no trucking, no mail. I actually had a grant application due that had to be in Sacramento. I think it was Monday at 5 o'clock or something. There was no mail because of the snowstorm. There hadn't been post office trucks coming up and down through the canyon, and then I had to, and one of my staff actually waited for the snow to clear and drove it down. But there are challenges with our geography. Staff capacity, it's really, really hard to get people who have a mindset good experience and education in the public health workforce. So what we've done to meet that challenge is we really think about who we can grow. I mean, there are people who work in the health system, the public health system, for their entire careers. So we know when we see someone promising who's really young that we want to grow their experience, grow their education, because they're going to be adding back into our same community 20 years from now. Resources. We don't have a lot of resources. The one thing I didn't do was go down our FTEs and our budget and everything. Our entire agency budget is just under $3.5 million. And our agency is a multi-division agency. We have public health, senior nutrition and transportation, environmental health, Office of Emergency Services, Veteran Services, and we do all this with about 18 FTEs. So we all wear a ton of hats. The first 3 years I was director, I was still the project officer for like four of our programs for teen pregnancy prevention, tobacco, writing the progress reports. I mean, you're literally doing it all. The other rural challenge is a difficult history and collaboration. We have three hospital districts that are they're fighting with each other for people. They're fighting for utilization, not only an outflux of patients going to Chico, which is about an hour and a half in one direction, or out to Nevada, which is an hour and a half in the other direction, but they're fighting within their districts for people who are utilizing their services. And probably our most difficult challenge is a political climate that has very, very conservative views. We've actually in the past applied for grants and received them that our board has said, we don't need that here. We don't want that here. And so it's been a challenge to educate them about who we are and what we do as public health. It's funny because a couple of months ago we had a staff retreat. And as part of the staff retreat, my 12-year-old went around with a video camera and went around to the health club, to school, to the restaurant, different places, and asked people, what is public health? And I was shamed at some of the answers because people really think public health is all about immunizations. They know our drive-through flu clinics. They know all of these things. So for me, that was a chance to let our staff know, let's use the work that we're doing today to really educate people to know how we're here to serve them. So we have used accreditation as an opportunity. I had the pleasure of listening to Dr. Chapman at our annual meeting in California for health directors earlier, and one of his first slides was he was showing how the Chinese character for challenge, or the Chinese word for challenge, shared a character with opportunity. Well, opportunity is the key in everything. So what we knew that we had to do, I had a past director who told me, no man is a prophet in his own land. And now I know what that means. Nobody listens to me. They don't think I know anything. So what we do as a health department is we say, look, the Affordable Care Act has a new component in it where district hospitals, our district hospitals, to maintain their tax-exempt status, have got to do a community health needs assessment. And guess what? It has to include the social determinants of health. And guess what else? It's got to be done in concert with the local health department. Wow, what an opportunity. Public health accreditation. I don't tell my board, someone had a question for Alonzo, you know, about your health director is behind this, aren't they? So this isn't about me being behind it. This is about a national standard. And it's about the fact that our state supports it and that we have many colleagues in the field. And our mantra isn't that we're only going to serve some of the people with most of the money we have. We're here for population health. We're here to serve everybody. So accreditation aligned with what's happening in the Affordable Care Act for the hospitals really allowed us to meet the needs of multiple organizations and multiple systems. And the thing that we had been really just hammering over the heads of the hospitals are we went through the details of what they can expect in the Affordable Care Act, and we convinced them, if you want to do this and do it correctly, you can't do it without us. And guess what? We can't do it without the schools, without neighborhoods, without the government entities that that govern us. So use all those things to your advantage. I love this slide. This is done by Dr. Kevin Barnett from the Public Health Institute, and you don't need to read it all, but it basically shows you how, for the state health departments and the local health departments, and the hospitals, which are down below. We have all of these paralleled or well-aligned opportunities to do our community health assessments together, which meets our requirements for accreditation. The hospitals, they have something to staple onto their IRS Form 990 Schedule H, and then how the implementation plan is really an opportunity for us to leverage all of our resources. And guess what? We're all meeting the same mutual goal of improved community health, and we can't get there without each other. This one is used by San Francisco Department of Public Health, who is also, they're actually in the same process as we are in accreditation. I'll mention a little bit later that one of the ways we're not doing this ourselves is we're actually a demonstration site for NACHO, National Association of City and County Health Officials. San Francisco is as well. And I love this slide that they use. It's a funnel to show how you mix up public health and the hospital system and the community system to do your assessments and your community health profile so that your improvement plan comes together as a community, a community-wide plan to improve community health. So in less professional terms, accreditation was really a no-brainer for us. It was a very likely partnership. We took those, actually one of our, part of the reason we started the collaborative work that we did was because one of the hospital CEOs came to me one day and he had a letter from the IRS. And it was the notice with the changes with the Affordable Care Act. And he dropped it on my desk and he said, "What am I supposed to do about this?" That was his "because we have to." And we took that "because we have to" say, hey, let's get together a plan of how we can each approach this collectively. So it didn't happen overnight. It wasn't easy. We built on existing partnerships and goals. So the last 5 years, we've had a lot of different individual and not-so-individual projects with the schools, with the hospitals that involved successes in policy change, joint policy change, successes in how we do business together within our systems, successes in blending our monies. And if we hadn't done that before, I don't think we could just walk in the door and have this agreement to collaborate on this project. For everybody, we all had access to data and a knowledge base that we didn't have individually. And also, it's clear that the local health department serves the whole county population, while the hospital districts serve their specific district boundaries. But we knew that those lines were getting blurred as time went by and the way we did business changed. And I think one of the greatest things was thank goodness for FAB, thank goodness for the Affordable Care Act, because it provided this context for us for a shared coordination rather than something forced. So Alonzo talked a bit about the accreditation prerequisites. For us, we approach the prerequisites, which are your community health assessment, your community health improvement plan, and your organizational strategic plan. We just use those as the recipe for the triple aim: improved quality of healthcare, improved population health, and reduced healthcare costs. Something had a question. I'm keeping in my mind the question about the hospitals. I'm not going to go over these domains. Alonzo talked about them. They're basically the ten essential public health services with administration and governance added in. But I do have to say, I was at a meeting. I think it was in D.C. about a year ago, and I sat at a table with someone from Alexandria, Virginia, and when I explained where I was from and where I worked, she said, "Oh, so your health department can't provide the 10 essential public health services." And I said, "No, not only can't we, but we do. Every health department provides those." And the accreditation piece was, how do we do it with an eye towards quality improvement in everything that we do? So I've heard a lot of my colleagues talk about the 10 essential public health services and the 12 domains as, oh, wow, it's something on top of what we do. No, it's what you do every single day, and it's about infusing quality in what you do every single day. So our project approach has been obviously a collaborative approach, and the key partners are the local health department, our three district hospitals, tribal health. It's interesting because tribal health has always, for like the past 25 years, they've been just kind of taken a step back and done their own thing. But over the past few years, we had some successful projects with them in oral health, maternal child adolescent health, and they began to trust us some more. So our tribal health is called the Greenville Rancheria, and they'd actually done their own community health assessment a year ago. There's no need for them to do it again, but they wanted to be a part of this partnership because their assessment focused specifically on the Native American population, and they wanted a broader assessment and also something that reflected how they fit within the larger healthcare system. And I thought that that was very, very perceptive of their director to recognize that and to want to be a part of this partnership. We also partner with a community-based organization that helps us a lot with the data collection and crunching and some of the outreach pieces. And when we started our partnership, we also included an academic institution, which is a junior college, Feather River College. And I have to admit, they've been our weakest partner along the way. I think number one, because there's not a natural fit there. Number two, they've had a huge revolving door of college president, dean of instruction. I mean, it's just, there's been a lot of change there. And our biggest mistake was they were the one partner that we didn't get a formal agreement from their governing entity. So those are important. You go we have formal agreements from our county board of supervisors, each of the hospital boards and tribal council. That's the one entity that we didn't clinch that. So as I was talking about before, challenge just means transformation. What a great opportunity to continually reinvent how you do your work. And Neil Halfon from UCLA, I love this. Every system is perfectly designed to achieve exactly the results it gets. If you never change your system, you're going to keep getting exactly what you're designed to do. So we can only have new levels of performance when we redesign our existing systems. And to me, that's what these continual health assessments and improvement plans are all about. So checklist, I talked a little bit about this before. You have to negotiate agreements and they have to be formalized. Financing arrangements. We don't have the staff or the money or any the other types of resources to carry the load as a public health department. So we really had to sit down with the hospitals and find out what they would contribute to the process, how much money, when, and where it was going to be, and for what pieces. And then we also had very formal roles and responsibilities down to, we didn't name names because so many people have been changing positions. Through this process, we've had three different hospitals have gone through three different CEOs. But with these arrangements, we didn't lose the momentum with them. Governing entity and community support. There's been a ton of community engagement. And for us, again, we're focusing on the prerequisites right now because the prerequisites are the piece of accreditation that is, it's the meaningful piece. It's how you get your community to understand what you're doing to serve them. It's how you get your partners. So, to me, it's the most important part of this whole process, not the boxes that we check when we get ready to apply and, yep, we did that domain, yep, we have that documentation. The other checklist is build-in assistance and accountability. We are one of 12 counties that was funded by the National Association of City and County Health Officials to work on the prerequisites, the community health assessments and the community health improvement plans. By having NHCHA's assistance, we have a timeline that we're stuck to, and we're doing that timeline along with 11 other partners. They're all going through this, so we've got this built-in network of partners who are experiencing the same challenges, and we learn from each other. But also, NHCHA's excellent, and I see two, with providing excellent consultants who can provide you with technical assistance, resources, problem solve. And if you don't have a NHCHA grant, you can still do this by maybe assembling a set of regional partners who are all kind of launching their accreditation boat, or going to your association. And if you're a small county or large county, maybe those committees. But we're doing that in California. We're starting to talk in our small county committees about what can we do to kind of copy the kind of assistance that NHCHA has given the 12 demonstration sites, so that some of the smaller counties who have fewer resources can can do the same types of things and get the same types of assistance. So the way this collaborative approach has helped achieve the triple aim is that we certainly have a strong foundation for greater community cooperation to meet our health needs. The hospitals, they had to do community benefit plans before, but it was they didn't put a lot of thought into it, and a lot of it was written off as their charity care. They have a whole new way of looking at their community benefits now. So they're able to better coordinate and target their funding and their programs. For us as a public health department, we also have a whole new way about looking at how we deploy our resources. And probably the best thing is that, you know, partnerships don't just exist because you get along. You actually have to have something meaningful to work towards. Talk louder? Oh, okay. Okay. So it was funny, someone in the audience had talked about the funding streams and the buckets of the funding streams and how it's hard to get across silos. So Neil Halfon, Dr. Halfon, also described the three eras of public health, and I love this. First era, 1750 to 1950, it's all about infection control. Let's just keep the disease down. In the second era, it's about chronic disease management and how we're funded kind of made us stay in those buckets, right? We have narrow criteria for program eligibility. We fund maternal child, adolescent health, tobacco, all of those things. And there is generally not that much community-wide accountability. So now we're in the third era of public health, and that third era is reflective of how we're funded by the federal government and the states, and it really is about greater service flexibility, a focus on the entire spectrum of health across all age spans, and also a focus on outcomes across the whole system. So we have a new way of looking at things. I won't read through all of these, but for the public health department, you know, we used to work from the funding, count numbers, rely on traditional health partners, and now we think about how do we blend our money to achieve some big mutual goals, how do we keep an eye on the outcomes, and how do we engage everybody, because everybody has shared accountability for community outcomes. So the new fundamentals of population health are really about looking at the entire system, not services. Again, blending our funding and aligning incentives and outcomes. This is really similar to Alonzo's, one of his last slides. I'm hoping that what we achieve, and I know we've achieved it at the partner level, is that we've become a credible convener. We obviously share our time and our expertise, and we're a trusted partner. And same benefits as Alonzo talked about in terms of credibility. So would you quickly repeat your question about the hospitals and the hospital partnerships? Can you have a question about... So her question was, how are you working with the hospital? And I think you also said business partners, so you're not cross-cutting. Yeah. And it really, you know, what's interesting is when we started this process, the community health assessment, our healthcare partners thought it was a health assessment. And again, we've had all these community engagement meetings at the public level, town hall meetings, a series of town hall meetings, and then also with the business community, Rotaries, the hospital staff, our staff, and it's been a learning process for the community engagement process is really about educating them, because now they all understand that when we have our community health assessment has the social determinants of health, and the health system only impacts like less than 50% of what affects health, and they all get that now. So they also know that as we embark on our community health improvement plan, the pieces specific to the local health department and the hospitals is only, it's less than 50% of the improvement plan. The rest of it, we need to forge relationships with the business community, the schools, government, to help affect the rest of what affects health. Because health happens, we all know, you've seen the California endowment sign, health happens where? Everywhere, right? So that's really how the greatest benefit of community engagement for us.
Great. Mimi, thank you very much.